We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
National Contest Data Message Rate Supply.
The Parlay Payday.
Powered by BetQL.
Let BetQL's proven data and analytics help you become a better bettor. Download the BetQL app today.
11K a day.
That's right. You got another chance to win $1,000 right now in our 11K a day same day parlay contest. Text the word OCEAN, OCEAN, to the number 72881 now for your chance to win $1,000. Again, text OCEAN, OCEAN, to 72881 now for your chance to win a grand. We will have another keyword coming up at 5 o'clock, but right now, plenty of time. Text OCEAN, OCEAN, to 72881 for your chance to win $1,000. Good luck.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
All right, I'm here. My name is Gary Parish. I'm speaking to you from New York City. Bennett Dole's producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can.
Her daddy lost most everything on horse, whiskey, and wedding rings.
And I hope you didn't think the University of Memphis would make enough free throws to beat Houston in the second meeting between those two teams this season, because if you watch the game over the weekend, American Athletic Conference semifinal, you know that that was not the case. 15 of 27 from the line, that's 55.6%. That's not good enough against a top 10 team. That's the type of thing that'll cost you in a tightly contested game. So the Tigers miss 12 free throws, and they lose by two. Following day, unsurprisingly, left out of the NCAA tournament bracket. Still haven't been since 2014. Penny Hardaway will enter year four. Still with zero NCAA tournament appearances on his Wikipedia page. We'll talk about it all momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, Chris Patola is going to join me. He's a college basketball analyst for ESPN. I will talk to him about the big college basketball news of the day. And I had been told from various sources over the past few days, like, Monday's going to be busy when it comes to the coaching carousel. And that was the truth. Minnesota has fired Richard Pitino. DePaul has fired Dave Lado. And then the big one, Indiana has fired Archie Miller. I'll talk to Chris Spatola about Indiana firing Archie Miller. What should they do when it comes to replacing him? And who's his pick to win the national championship? How did he think the selection committee did with the bracket? Chris Patola going to join me in the next segment. When I finish that, what I would normally do is four notable stories at 4:44, at which point I would discuss four previously undiscussed stories, but I don't feel like doing that today. And considering this is my show, I'm in charge. We're not going to do it. Instead, I just want to focus strictly on the NCAA tournament bracket. And so we'll do that. What did the committee get right? What did the committee get wrong? How many teams did I correctly predict for the field? I'll tell you later on this hour, but here's a tease. More than Jerry Palm and Joe Lenardi. We'll talk NCAA tournament bracket right around 4:45. Jeff Calkins will be here at 5 o'clock. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with Memphis basketball. Another heartbreaker over the weekend. Final score, Houston 76, Memphis 74. And so the Tigers went into Selection Sunday with a 16-8 record overall, 11-4 in the conference. They, of course, missed both opportunities when it comes to getting wins over Houston, although both games were very, very, very close and came down to the final minute. At that point, it was crystal clear, I guess, to everybody besides Mike Oresko, the AAC commissioner, that Memphis was not going to be in the NCAA tournament, considering that they were 0-4, the Tigers, in quadrant one opportunities, and that they were sitting there with a 4-7 record in the first two quadrants and a quadrant three loss. Simply put, that's not an NCAA tournament resume when you start comparing it to other bubble teams Memphis was competing with, which is not to get confused with this. Memphis is one of the best teams in the country. Memphis right now is better than lots of teams that got at-large bids to the NCAA tournament. If you put Memphis on a neutral court today with Oklahoma, which is an 8 seed in this tournament, according to KenPom, Memphis would be favored. If you put Memphis on a neutral court right now with Utah State, which is an 11 seed in this tournament, Memphis would be favored over Utah State. Also over Syracuse and Clemson and UCLA and VCU and Virginia Tech and Missouri and Drake and Michigan State and Wichita State. The list is long. Memphis would be favored, according to KenPom, which has projections that line up with the betting lines basically every single day, definitely every single day. Memphis would be favored over at least 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 teams that got at-large bids to the NCAA tournament. But Memphis is not in the NCAA tournament. And that's because the committee doesn't spend much time talking about who's good and who's bad. They simply focus on resumes, bodies of work. What can you show us you've done? A little bit like if you're in high school or college or anywhere where you're getting instruction from a teacher or professor. You might be the smartest person in the room, but if you don't turn in the work, you don't have it to show, you will not be graded accordingly. Can't just raise your hand and say, but I think I'm smarter than everybody else in this class. Yeah, well, the work you gave us starting in November up until this day doesn't suggest as much. You don't have the resume. You can't get in. And so that's the biggest problem for Memphis. If somebody wants to sit here and say that on March 15th, Memphis is one of the best 40 teams in America, and that Memphis was playing like one of the best 30 teams in America, I'll nod my head in agreement. I think that's true. But you got to have the resume to show it, or else the committee doesn't care. And Memphis did not have the resume to show it. That was obvious even before the selection show started. Just to provide some context for you, again, Memphis was 4-7 in the first two quadrants. They had a quadrant three loss. They had zero wins in the first quadrant. The last team that got in the field was Drake out of the Missouri Valley Conference. Drake was 1-2 in quadrant one, 5-0 in quadrant two. So Drake was 6-2 in the first two quadrants with two quadrant three losses. But one of those quadrant three losses came without Tank Hemphill, who is their best player, leading scorer, and who is expected to be healthy and available for the NCAA tournament. So Drake 6-2 in the first two quadrants, Memphis 4-7. Drake, four games above 500 in the first two quadrants. Memphis, three games below 500 in the first two quadrants. Ultimately, that's what Memphis was up against. Simply did not have the resume to put them into the field. And it wasn't even that surprising that Memphis wasn't even labeled as one of the replacement teams in case somebody has to be pulled out of the bracket today or tomorrow because of COVID issues within the program. And there's a million different reasons this happened. Some of it is rooted in just what they did to their body of work very early on. If you go back to November, when one team after another was pulling out of the multi-team tournament that was going to be played in South Dakota, I was on record that Memphis should pull out of the event for two reasons. One, South Dakota didn't seem like a safe place to go from a COVID perspective. You didn't want to go there, get sick, and then have to postpone or cancel other games. But the bigger point I made was that because the most high-profile teams in the event had pulled out, suddenly Memphis was in a situation where it was likely, or at least possible, that they would do more damage to their body of work than they would enhance their body of work. In other words, when you've got some of those big, big programs that were ranked in the top 25 of the preseason poll scheduled to play, well, then you can go there, and if you beat them, woohoo. And if you lose to them, hey, it's not that bad. It's a quadrant one loss to a very good team. But when those teams got pulled out and then replaced with other lesser teams, suddenly Memphis found itself in a situation where there was a lot of exposure for bad things and not much opportunity for good things. And then, of course, you knew how it went. Went 1-2 in South Dakota with losses to Western Kentucky and VCU. Those aren't horrific losses, but it's two losses. One of them in quadrant two. And it seems undeniable, especially with the benefit of hindsight, that Memphis would have been better off just not even going there. But then there's also other problems. Lost to a bad Auburn team without Sharif Cooper, he can't do that. That was a quad two loss. The loss to Tulsa at home, can't do that. That was a quad three loss. That is your quad three loss. I really do believe if you switch maybe just one, definitely two of those games, flip them from losses to wins, then we are talking about who Memphis is playing in the first round of the NCAA tournament right now. As it is, we're talking about Memphis in the NIT, and that's because Memphis missed two big opportunities in the final week of the season that would have allowed them to make up for all of the bad stuff they did early. First, on March 7th, down in Houston, they lost 67-64, banked in three-pointer at the buzzer. And then this past Saturday, down in Texas, they lost 76-74 to Houston. And that was that. And there's a lot of reasons they lost. The main one is because they were playing an awesome team. It's not hard to lose to awesome teams. But if you want to go below that a little bit, it happened at the free throw line. The Tigers were 15 of 27 from the free throw line in that game against Houston after the previous Sunday they were 10 of 20 from the free throw line. So in this past game, 55.6%, previous game, 50%. That means they went 25 of 47 from the free throw line in two losses to Houston. And they lost those games by a total of 5 points. It really is true. If you just shoot decently from the free throw line, you'll win both games. And if you just shoot decently from the free throw line, you're in the NCAA tournament. It's absolutely unbelievable, yet unsurprising, and immensely frustrating. Free throws have haunted this program for as long as I can remember.
Dude. And the thing is like, I've heard, like, callers and stuff today saying, well, you know, they really got to work on it. I don't know. It is a curse of the program, GP. I don't know what they work on as far as free throws go. It doesn't matter. They bring in new players every couple years. It's always the same.
Well, one of the things John Calipari used to say all the time when people would ask him about bad shooting, like, you know, your team's not shooting it real well. You know, what are you going to, you know, how do you fix that? He said, though, well, the best way to fix a bad shooting team is to recruit better shooters. And I really do think that's the root of it. Although Boogie Ellis is supposed to be a good shooter, and Lester Quinones is supposed to be a good shooter. Like, when this recruiting class enrolled 2 years ago, one of the things that people said outside of James Wiseman should be fabulous is that, oh boy, they got a lot of shooters. And yet, Boogie Ellis shoots 62.5% from the free throw line. Lester Quinones shoots 65% from the free throw line. DJ Jeffrey shoots 54.7% from the free throw line. And Musa Cisse, like, he's barely been playing basketball for, you know, a handful of years. I don't blame him, but as long as we're citing stats, 33.9% from the free throw line. Like, your starting lineup, outside of Landers Nolley and maybe DeAndre Williams, just bad free throw shooters. I mean, how do you shoot if your Boogie Ellis 40% from three and 62% from the free throw line? Like, that's not normal.
No.
And so I think it's a mental thing. It has to be a mental thing.
It's got
to
be.
And so I would think that at some point this offseason, it is crucial that Penny Hardaway and that staff figure out how to correct two things. You got to figure out how to make free throws. Missing them literally just kept you out of the NCAA tournament. Think about all the conversations we're going to have between now and the start of next season about, is this the time Penny finally gets to the NCAA tournament? They wouldn't even be conversations if you just were a decent free throw shooting team. Not great. Didn't have to be great. Just be okay. Memphis shot 62.1% from the free throw line this season. That ranks 339th in the country. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
That's got to get fixed. And if I were Penny, I'd get a KenPom subscription, and then I would click on that free throw percentage ranking, and I'd go, okay, Oral Roberts is number one, Colorado number two, Virginia number three, Lafayette number four, Detroit number five, and I'd get in touch with these people if I had relationships with any of those people. Is there anything you do? Is it just you got great free throw shooters, you just recruited them? Or is there anything you do specifically that allows you to be great from the free throw line? Because if you got any advice to offer, I'd accept it. That's got to get figured out.
Yep.
And then, of course, the other thing is the turnovers. The turnovers actually weren't bad out, you know, to Memphis standards in the two games against Houston. But they were bad in the season. And they were the thing that kept Memphis from being better offensively. And that is the reason Memphis, even with the third-ranked defense in America, lost too many games to get into the NCAA tournament. It's just frustrating. It didn't have to be this way. And yeah, it's true, the AAC didn't do Memphis any favors whatsoever. And they almost found itself in a situation where they were going to be a one-bid league because they didn't prioritize their bubble teams. That was a failure at the conference level. But ultimately, Memphis didn't have as many opportunities as it should have had, but Memphis did have opportunities. You got two games against Houston in the final week of the season, and you couldn't win either one of them. Not because you weren't good enough, but because you couldn't do a thing that we could go find a high school team that could do it at a high level right now. You couldn't stand at a free throw line and sink shots. Incredibly frustrating. So now the question becomes, like, what does next season look like? And the answer is, nobody knows. What does the recruiting class look like? Do you add transfers? Do you lose them? You know, we'll see after this NIT run is over. But if you're looking for a reason to be encouraged, that team did get a lot better from the start of the season to the end of the season. And that is what we usually equate to coaching. Whose teams get better? I was talking to Kelvin Sampson at one point this season, and one of the things he said is, my teams have a track record for getting better as the season progresses. I went and looked it up, and it was like six straight years he outperformed his preseason KenPom ranking. Maybe five, but it was consistent and not for an insignificant amount of time. Memphis did that this season. Memphis started 39th at KenPom and finished 38th. But more impressively is that after that second loss to Tulsa, Memphis dropped all the way down to 71st at KenPom. And then they switched up the offense a little bit, started guarding even better than they already were, and they climbed from 71st all the way up to 38th, and that's where they'll finish. They're one of the highest-ranked KenPom teams to get left out of the bracket, but based on the resume, they didn't get robbed. They were supposed to be left out of this bracket. And so what you hope now is that enough of these pieces come back, and then you add to it to where you can, quote-unquote, pick up right where you left off. This was one of the 30 or so best teams in America heading into the NCAA tournament. So if you get enough of that back, you should be projected to go to next season's NCAA tournament. But that's the key. Now you got to try to hold this thing together as best you can. And again, see if you can pick up right where you left off. I'll talk more about it with Jeff Calkins a little after 5 o'clock. When we come back, Chris Spatola is going to join me. Talking college basketball with him. Listen to the Gary Parrish Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Stretch my hands to you.
Life like, this is what your life like. Try to live the life right. People really know you push your buttons like type right. This is like a movie.
We'll get into the NCAA tournament bracket in the next segment. I'll tell you my final four picks, my national champion. We'll do that again right around 4:45. Jeff Calkins will be here at 5 o'clock. But right now, he is a college basketball analyst for ESPN. Also has a show on SiriusXM 371. It's Chris Spatola. Please make him the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. Using food and wine to create memorable times.
Chris, it's GP. How you doing, man?
GP, I'm good. I didn't realize I was the big interview. I don't know if I'm worthy of that now.
You are 100% worthy of that. You were calling Memphis games early in this season. You've been you're just absolutely terrific. I appreciate you being here. I know how busy you are. Let's start with the big news of the day before we get to the NCAA tournament. Indiana has fired Archie Miller after four seasons. Do you think it was the right move?
Yeah, well, I mean, look, we all work at the behest of our employers, Gary, and as we know, in this day and age, if you work at a place like Indiana, there's going to be a short leash there. And look, if I'm being candid about the coaching job he did there, it wasn't very good. Like, you should be able, if you're that guy, you should be able to turn a program like that around pretty quickly. The problem I have with it, and not necessarily the firing itself, but the way in which these functions happen, $10 million, like we're getting that as a philanthropic endeavor here, that we're giving $10 million to fire a guy. Like, the charade of professional sports and all of that, I don't think there's any greater manifestation, Gary, these days than the way in which we hire and fire coaches and the way in which the carousel works. I'm not trying to, you know, go all high and mighty here, but I find it funny that Indiana is trying to guise the buyout and the way in which they're paying for it as a philanthropic endeavor.
Talking to Chris Spatola from ESPN, do you have an idea about what you would do now if you're Indiana? Obviously, some big names out there. There's some thought that they could target Scott Drew, who has Indiana roots. Chris Beard makes some sense. I've seen John Beilein. I've even seen Rick Pitino. If I put Chris Spatola in charge of the search firm, what are you doing?
Well, I'm not hiring Rick Pitino. You know, and I just called the MAC championship, so I am as up to date on Iona and Rick Pitino as perhaps most are, but I wouldn't hire him. I think to go down that road, Indiana doesn't need to do that. It's gimmicky. It's shallow. Indiana doesn't need to do that. Look, I think Chris Beard, and I've said this for, you know, a few years now, I think Chris Beard is one of the five best coaches in college basketball right now. And you talk about a guy. And I said this, Gary, during one of the games that I was doing, and it may have been one of their games. You know, this idea of transfers, grad transfers, cobbling together rosters, that's not going anywhere. That is the here and now. That's the way in which this thing is going to be done now in college basketball. So if I'm hiring somebody, I'm going to go out and I'm going to try to get somebody who has proven that they can work that market, they can mine that market. And they have the ability to get those guys in and create a unified group in the quickest way possible. So, you know, I love Chris Beard. If I'm Scott Drew, I'm not leaving Baylor. I mean, I've already proven that I could put together a team that is, you know, could run through the landscape of college basketball. I think the you know, the faith-based part of that program and, you know, playing in the Big 12, I think it's perfect for Scott. But, look, I'm not a carousel kind of a guy, but the guy I would go after is Chris Beard.
To your point, when I talk to NBA people, I often ask them about, you know, because in non-pandemic times, they're popping around the country, they're in practices, they see it up close. And if I ask the question, so who runs the best practices? Who impresses you when you're in their building in terms of like, okay, now they're coaching? Not who impresses you at the bar, not who impresses you at dinner, who impresses you in a basketball setting? The name I hear just as much as any other name is Chris Beard.
Yeah, and you know what you say? It's funny you say practice, because that has been my thing with him all along. I didn't know much about Chris until I actually started doing, you know, he got to the Big 12 and then I was doing his games. And, you know, there's two things I always say to people. You want to know who a coach is, and if you can't see him practice, just look out there at his team and tell me how they play. Do they play hard? Are they responsive to the coach? Are they pretty unified? Are they talking? Are they communicating? All those things. Just look at how his team plays. But the other thing is, go watch a practice. And within the first 15 minutes of a Chris Beard practice, the first thing you're going to say is, man, this guy knows what he's doing. And oh, by the way, his players are drinking up every single thing that he says. It's clockwork. And so, you know, again, that's a big, big part of it. But the way in which he's figured this out, like, here's the thing, Gary, like, he got into the Big 12 and he looked at the landscape and he said, oh my God, Kansas has won this thing like 15 years in a row. Scott Drew's got a really good thing going there. How can I differentiate? How can I figure this out? And he's done that. Again, he's gotten some pretty good players who, you know, a few have left early for the draft, but then he's cobbled together the grad transfers and the transfers, and he's done that really, really well. That's where, you know, I think if you go into the Big Ten at this point, especially after the year that league just had, you've got to look at that league and say, okay, how do I differentiate? And at Indiana, it should be a lot easier than it was at Texas Tech. So to 100% what you just said, there's nobody, he's one of the five best guys doing it right now. And if that guy's available, you definitely have to try to get that guy.
You mentioned the way Chris Beard is roster building. And obviously with this transfer waiver, it presumably going into place where, you know, Division I transfers can move without penalty at least once, your roster building is going to be vastly different at different places. I say all that to say this. We are about to start an NCAA tournament. Two of the biggest brands in the sport are not in it, Kentucky and Duke. Do you think at Kentucky and Duke they will start roster building differently, given that, being so heavily reliant on first-year players, it works if they're Zion, you know, RJ and Cam, or if it's, you know, Devin Booker and Karl Anthony Towns. But when it's just freshmen who aren't obviously and undeniably special, it gets a little more complicated. Do you expect Kentucky and Duke to switch things up a little bit?
See, here's my take on that, Gary. There's a theoretical way of looking at that, right? There's a very antiseptic, okay, yes, let's just change philosophies and try to go out and get guys who are going to be here for a while. But then there's the practicality of, well, we're trying to go out and get the best guys. Like, for example, Coach K, you know, go back to his teams in the 90s, Gary. Like, Grant Hill, even Christian Laettner, you know, some of those teams that he had in the 90s, he was recruiting one and dones. That just wasn't that didn't happen at that time. So the catch 22 right now is, okay, we want to try to go out and get these best players, but do I tell them no? Do I back off some of these guys? How do I target guys that I think may stay a few years? What if I get the next Trae Young, but all of a sudden he explodes in that first year and then we lose him? It's an inexact science. The other thing is, if you're Coach K, how much longer are you doing this? So, like, are you really going to, in midstream, kind of have an entire change of philosophy when you go out on the road, Gary, and you recruit? Every coach believes that the incoming class is a great class. I mean, they all talk about their freshmen. So, you know, the change of philosophy, I think, is more of an academic type of a philosophical discussion more than the practicality of it. The thing with both those teams, though, Gary, they may luck into that. You know, like, I don't know, outside of Matthew Hurt, I don't know how many guys are leaving Duke. I don't know how many guys are leaving Kentucky. So you may end up lucking into that by having this down year, which is kind of what you have to do now in college basketball. You got to suffer through a really bad year to then follow that up with a good year, because in theory, most of those guys are coming back.
Talking to Chris Spatola, he's a college basketball analyst for ESPN. The bracket was released last night. How do you think the selection committee did?
You know, I don't have any complaints with this one, Gary. I really don't. You know, you could, because any of those bubble teams, and this is my big complaint about college basketball, and I think we need to look at it as a whole. Guys like you who are the thought thinkers in our sport, we spend entirely too much time this time of year talking about mediocre to bad teams. We spend so much time talking about this bubble. And look, I get it. There's a market for it. Joe Lenardi's written a book on it. There's a whole industry behind it. My network forces us to talk about it during games because, you know, that there's the belief that that's what sells. My problem is it distracts from, you know, that's where college football, I think, has it, where I know it's only four teams, but because it's only four teams, or even if it goes to eight, you end up talking about the best the sport has to offer. So if we're going to sit here, if I'm going to sit here today and start complaining about Louisville being left out, or this team being left out, or this team got in, or Syracuse, you know, got in, but they don't play in the first four, to me, it's a distraction from the point that if Gonzaga doesn't win this year, I think this is as big. It's not as big as UNLV in 91. I don't think it's quite as big as Kentucky, who was undefeated before they got to, you know, to that Final Four. But it's a pretty big deal if Gonzaga doesn't win this year, because I think they have become so separated from the field that, you know, my thing is, you know, I think they got a nice little draw. I actually think Baylor got a pretty brutal draw. Everybody's talking about Michigan. I think Baylor got the toughest draw of those four one seeds. But outside of that, I mean, the top 16 really wasn't far off of where we all thought. And why waste our time with these teams that, you know, were on the bubble and either got in or didn't get in?
I think that's really smart. You know, we've set this sport up where, you know, the week leading into the NCAA tournament, we probably spend more time talking about Drake and St. Louis than we do, Gonzaga and Illinois, which is just, it doesn't make any sense on an obvious level. And so, like, you make great points there. This whole bubble talk thing, and listen, I fall victim to it just as much as anybody else, but we end up talking about teams that don't matter. Like, they just won't, they'll be done a week from today. They don't matter.
Right. And oh, by the way, Gary, the bubble, the closer we get to Selection Sunday, gets progressively worse because those bad or mediocre, they're not all bad teams, they're mediocre teams who have no shot at winning the title. Those teams are inherently untrustworthy. So those teams are still losing games. And oh, by the way, this is my other frustrating part, just from a, like, you know, again, a practical standpoint. It's, you can't have the conversation talking about one team, because what one team does is also affected by what all the other bubble teams do. So we end up talking about, well, is Syracuse in or out? Well, maybe like right now they are, but what if somebody plays later today and does something? I just, the whole conversation is, to me, it's a waste of time, and we end up, and it's not good for the sport. I don't think it's good for the sport.
Wrapping up here with Chris Spatola, college basketball analyst for ESPN. Last thing before I let you go, I know you think Gonzaga is going to win this national championship. They are the favorite. They've been number one literally all season. If Gonzaga doesn't win it, who wins it? Who's the biggest threat to the Zags?
You know, Illinois is playing really, really well, man. And I, you know, they've got, I actually think Illinois, you know, I know folks think Gonzaga's got the easiest path. I mean, Illinois got the weakest of the two seeds. And, you know, they're going to have a number of different, this is the other thing I look at, they're going to have a number of different styles they're going to have to play to get to, you know, theoretically a Final Four. So I think if Illinois, and by the way, it helps to have a guy late game, late clock, like a DeSumo, I think having, in order to beat Gonzaga, you're going to have that dominant guard in order to do it. And then to have an anchor inside like a Coburn, those freshmen on Illinois have started to play better. Look, you don't win the Big Ten tournament this year without being playing really good basketball at this point. So I'd hate to go chalk, Gary, and I think this tournament's going to have, you know, perhaps some interesting results here in the early going. But I think if there's a team right now that I would say, man, that team is talented enough and playing well enough, I'd throw Illinois in the mix.
Oh, I completely agree. Like that Illinois team is 14-1 in its past 15. They are a one seed and had that locked up no matter what happened in the Big Ten tournament title game. For whatever it's worth, I've got them playing Gonzaga in the national championship game. So you and I were on the same page. That's Chris Spitola from ESPN. You can obviously watch him on ESPN. You can catch him on SiriusXM channel 371. He's on Twitter at Chris_Spitola. Man, you're always terrific. I forever appreciate your time. Thank you for being here.
Oh, and I'm grateful for you, Gary. Thank you, man.
All right, brother. That's Chris Spitola from ESPN. The point he makes about bubble teams is 100% dead on. Like, we spend so much time talking about teams that ultimately do not matter.
Yep.
Like, imagine if in college football, the week leading up to the SEC championship game, the Big Ten championship game, the Big 12 championship game, we spent time talking about the football teams ranked 73rd and 74th in the country.
Yeah, like, it makes no sense.
What are we doing?
No.
Like, and I say this as somebody who does it. Like, I'm not pointing fingers here. If anything, I'm pointing them right at myself. You get sucked into who's in, who's out. And I understand for individual fan bases, it matters immensely. Like, Memphis fans were all over, you know, bubble talk, you know, leading into the American Athletic Conference tournament. Why? Because they're a part of it. But the idea that on a broader stage, we're spending time we should be spending talking about Gonzaga and Baylor and Illinois and Michigan and Alabama and Houston and Ohio State and Iowa, the idea that we're spending much of that time, if not most of that time, talking about Colorado State and Boise State and Louisville and Syracuse, a bunch of teams that just we won't even remember them a week from today, is pretty, I don't know, I do think counterproductive for the sport. I'm not saying it'll change. I'm not even saying I'll change, but I do think he makes a good point about it, and it's probably something that people who have jobs like I have should keep in mind. We haven't talked much about the bracket in general because we spent the opening segment discussing the Tigers. Chris Spitola sort of bouncing around. But I do want to get into the bracket. 68 teams placed into a tournament last night. You watched it on CBS. That's America's most watched network. It's the network of stars. I told you already I've got Gonzaga and Illinois in the national championship game. What does the rest of my bracket look like? We'll get into that next. You listen to the Gary Parrish Show. We're on 92.9 FM ESPN. New Amsterdam Vodka. It's a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness. Filtered 3 times to create a soft finish, as I'm sure you got to know by now. So smooth you can drink it straight. And yeah, it really is what I buy when I'm inside the liquor store. And that's because it's a quality vodka that's reasonably priced. You can find a more expensive bottle of vodka. They make them. I just don't know why you'd spend your extra money on that when I've identified a quality vodka that is reasonably priced. You can get a big bottle for less than $20 at most liquor stores in the area. You into flavored vodka? New Amsterdam makes a bunch. Watermelon, lemon, coconut. The list is long. If you don't see the flavor you want inside your favorite package store, ask them to get it for you. They can get it for you. They will. Also, gluten-free vodka. So if you're on a gluten-free diet, either by choice or necessity, it doesn't matter to me. It's none of my business. That's the New Amsterdam vodka for you. New Amsterdam gluten-free vodka. It's got a brown label on it. Next time you're in a bar, restaurant, or liquor store, ask for it by name. New Amsterdam vodka. Pour your soul out on the web, newamsterdamspirits.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The God Killer, this Tokyo and I'm Godzilla. Playing blackjack versus death gun on the car dealer. Just bought a demon, I'm screaming about the car dealer. Last temptation of Mike, but I'm a God digger. Tell me as a Bob that the God
don't need a wonderful news on the vaccination front. I saw today that folks in Mississippi, any adult, is eligible to get the vaccine starting tomorrow. So that's tremendous news. But you still got to be safe. And the best way to do that is to get you a bottle of Germ Ready. It's a brand new hand sanitizer made right here in the United States of America. It takes 30 seconds to apply, kills 99.99% of all germs, and then it keeps killing germs for up to 6 hours after application. One of my greatest regrets, Big Bet Bennett, is that I didn't bring 50 bottles of Germ Ready to the CBS Broadcast Center, because I'm watching people walking around, and boy, you have no idea how strict it is in that building right now. I got to get tested every other day, and every time I say, I'm a fully vaccinated man, I'm fine, they say, doesn't matter, we're getting tested every day. And then I watch people constantly putting on hand sanitizer. 20 minutes later, they're putting on more hand sanitizer. I'm like, you need Germ Ready. You don't have to keep putting it on over and over again. If you got Germ Ready, you put it on one time, you're protected up to 6 hours. Comes in two sizes, 150 milliliters for $11, 250 milliliters for $12. It's available right now, germready.com. That's the website. Go there and then hit the buy now button and get you a bottle or get you 10 bottles. germready.com, germready.com. Be confident, stay protected with Germ Ready. On the web, germready.com. Jeff Calkins is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. Penny Hardaway spoke to the media earlier today. What did he say? I'll talk to Jeff Calkins about that. But right now, we'd normally be doing four notable stories at 444, but really I just wanted to focus on the NCAA tournament bracket because I feel like that is among the biggest stories in sports today. Big Bet Bennett, do people still print out brackets? Did you print out a bracket?
Oh, yeah. I got to hold stuff in my hands. I'm a printout guy.
You know what? I'm a printout guy as well.
Yeah, I like to print out.
I mean, not under normal circumstances, but there's something about holding that NCAA tournament bracket and writing the words, whether it's Gonzaga or Kansas or Iowa or Illinois or Arkansas, writing the words into the bracket and then getting to the very end till you crown a national champion, something we all grew up with. I love technology. I love that I don't have to hold a newspaper anymore.
Right.
I love that I can pay bills on my phone. But I still kind of want to have a printed out paper bracket. I'm holding one in my hand right now. Are you holding one in your hand right now?
I'm holding one right here in my hand as we speak.
So at the CBS Broadcast Center, we get the bracket a little early. And we used to like get it, and it was just like a free-for-all. Mm-hmm. Like you'd get it about 30 minutes early, and it was awesome because you knew that literally millions of people around the country, if not the world, are waiting to see this thing. And you got it. You just sit there with it.
Yep.
And then, you might remember a few years ago, somebody leaked it. It got on Twitter.
I forgot about that. Yes.
Somebody leaked the bracket. And
that I bet that was a nightmare for the NCAA, or just for everybody.
How about for CBS?
Yeah, for CBS.
You've got a show that is rooted in mystery, and suddenly it's not a mystery to anybody who's on social media. Like, not great. Not great. So the brackets are under tight wraps now. You can't just walk around and grab one the way you used to. But eventually, I did get one. And honestly, I don't have a whole lot of issues with it in general. Like Chris Pitola accurately pointed out, we talked about in the last segment, we spend so much time talking about the bubble teams. And the truth is, those teams almost never matter. But the whole selection show is built around who is in and who is out. And every bracketologist's job is to figure out who is in and who is out. And I like to participate in that because there's, you know, some websites that judge it. And I'm like, I'll get involved in this. I've been ranking 26 basketball teams every morning since November. I can put together 68 real quick and establish it and tweet it, and we'll see how it goes. And so yesterday, in a span of, I'd say, 12 minutes, I put together a bracket. Not necessarily the matchups, but just like, here's my 4-1 seeds, here's my 4-2 seeds, mm-hmm. here's my 4-3 seeds, all the way through the bottom. I had 68 teams. Go ahead, Big Bet Bennett. Ask me how many I got right.
How many did you get right, GP?
Well, first off, ask me how many Joe Lunardi got right.
How many did Joe Lunardi get right?
He got 66 of 68.
That's pretty impressive.
That's pretty impressive.
Bad.
Go ahead and ask me about Jerry Palm.
Well, how'd Jerry Palm do?
He also got 66 of 68. That's pretty good, huh?
Okay, Jerry.
They hold like these are men who have, their whole jobs are tied to accurately predicting a bracket. So yeah. Joe Lunardi got 66 of 68. That's terrific.
Yeah.
Jerry Palm got 66 of 68. That's mm-hmm. terrific. Now, if you'd like to take this opportunity to ask me how I did, I'd be happy to answer.
Yeah, GP, how did you do in your bracket selection process?
I actually got 67 of 68.
I got
67 of 68. I mean, I'm not bragging. It only took me 12 minutes. I'd never brag about something that only takes me 12 minutes to do. But my point is, it only took me 12 minutes to get 67 of 68. And at the very end, when I was debating myself for the last spot, because, by the way, I was on a podcast with a lesser-known bracketologist at some point back in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking, and you know, I lost track of who I was talking to. I just thought I was talking to anybody, like it could have been Big Bet Bennett or anybody else. I forgot I was talking to a bracketologist. And one of the points I made right to this bracketologist's face, I said, it's not hard to put together a bracket. Like, you know, we have, quote, bracketologists, but you could teach anybody to be a bracketologist. Like, if I sat down with my wife, who doesn't watch college basketball at all, you know, like, you know, if I'm watching it and she's with me, then she'll watch it. But like, if you asked her right now, who are the four number one seeds? I don't think she would know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she might know Gonzaga's undefeated and ranked number one. And she might know that, you know, Texas A&M didn't make the tournament because she loves Buzz Williams. He's her favorite coach. But outside of that, she just doesn't keep up with the sport.
Yeah.
That's not my point. My point is this. If I were to sit her down and say, okay, listen, we're going to learn to be a bracketologist today. You're great at this Aiden and Ollie thing, but I want you to spread your wings a little bit. I want you to learn how to be a bracketologist so we can bond over college basketball. And I said, you got 3 hours? And she said, sure, I got 3 hours, even though she probably wouldn't have 3 hours because she's a mother of three and a business owner.
Yeah.
But if I said, if you got 3 hours, and she said yes, I could sit her down and I could teach her how to build the bracket. And I don't mean like you got to put a one seed here. I mean, like, this is what matters to the committee. Now, this is the net rankings, and this is the quadrant system, and this is KenPom. These are the automatic bids, and now I need you to fill in your at-large bids. Anybody with an understanding of what matters and the data to dive into can put together this bracket. You don't have to watch basketball to put together this bracket. It's not hard. And so I was telling this bracketologist this. I was explaining it to him exactly as I just explained it to you. And at some point I realized I am telling a person right to his face on his own podcast that his job is
irrelevant.
Doesn't matter. anybody could do his job. It'd be like if somebody came on my radio show and tried to explain to me how anybody could do my radio show, right? That's what I was doing to this guy. So I felt bad and I did apologize, but it doesn't make what I said any less true. The truth is, when you get to 2 hours before the selection show, every bracketologist in the country agrees on 65, maybe even 66 of the teams. And then you've got maybe 4 or 5 teams for 2 spots. And you could reasonably put any of them in those 2 spots.
Yeah.
And you just guess. And then what you do is you just hope that the selection committee guesses the same way you guessed at the end. Because there's really no great way to distinguish between those last 3 or 4 or 5 teams for 2 spots. But make no mistake, that is what it always is. It is, you got 2 spots open, you got 5 teams that could all reasonably be put there. Which 2 am I going to put? So when I, with tongue-in-cheek a bit, accurately point out that I did get 67 of 68 and Jerry Palm only got 66 and Joe Lunardi only got 66. The truth is, we all had the same 66, and then I guessed right on one of the last teams and they guessed wrong. That's as honestly as I could put it. So as I'm sitting there trying to pick through the last little bit, I've got 1 spot left and I'm picking between Wichita State and Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm arguing it both ways with myself. All in the span of, again, 12 minutes. And I'm like, okay, you got to have Wichita State in because they're not really going to make the AAC a one-bid league. And Wichita State is the regular season champ, even if it's not, listen, they're going to hang a banner and I won't tell them to pull it down. But Wichita State was not the best team in the AAC. They were maybe not even a top 3 team in the AAC. That championship is schedule-induced. But it is a real thing. So how is the committee going to look at that? And then I would go, okay, I'm going with Wichita State. And then I would say, but if I don't have Utah State in, and I don't have Boise State in, and I don't have Colorado State in, then suddenly the Mountain West Conference is a one-bid league with San Diego State. They're not going to do that. This was a league that was maybe going to get four bids 2 weeks ago. Now it's going to be a one-bid league? And so I'm picking between those two, and I'm going back and forth. And ultimately, I decided to put Utah State in, and Wichita State was my first team out. And ultimately, what I find out when the selection show happens is that it didn't matter what I did between them because they were both already in the field. They both made it. The AAC was a two-bid league, Mountain West, a two-bid league, and the power conference school that got booted out because of them was the Louisville Cardinals. And that was the big bubble story from Sunday, that Louisville, a team that most people had in the field, didn't make it. And though I don't feel sorry for Louisville, and I don't really have much of an argument, because if you are in a power conference and you are on the wrong side of the bubble, it just means you didn't take advantage of your opportunities. Like if you're in Conference USA or the Sun Belt or the Missouri Valley and you're on the wrong side of the bubble, then it's possible that you really are worthy, but you don't have the resume to show it because you didn't have the opportunities to create the resume. But if you're in the ACC, like Louisville is in the ACC, you had opportunities. Evidence being that Louisville was 1-6 in quadrant one opportunities. 1-6. Win one more of the go 2-5. And you're good. But they went 1-6. And they also had a quadrant three loss. Win that quadrant three game. You're probably good. But they went 1-6 in quadrant one, 6-0 in quadrant two. They were 7-6 in the first two quadrants with one quadrant three loss. They had plenty of opportunities. They didn't do enough. I don't feel bad for them. But I do think they should have been in the field over Wichita State.
Heck yeah.
Wichita State's 2-3 in the first two quadrants, 2-1 in the second quadrant. So Wichita State is 4-4. Also with one quadrant three defeat. So Louisville's one game above 500 in the first two quadrants with a quad three loss. Wichita State is 500 in the first two quadrants with a quad three loss. Louisville is higher in basically every computer, and yet Wichita State gets in and Louisville does not. Again, I'm not going to cry for Louisville. Just win one more quadrant one game. You had a million of them, and you're fine. But I will forever believe, if you boil it down to just those two, Wichita State and Louisville, Louisville should have been in over Wichita State. And if Louisville was in over Wichita State, then I would have had a perfect 68-68. In general, I thought the committee did a pretty good job on a surface level. Like the four number one seeds are exactly right. The four number two seeds are exactly right. Even though I can nitpick the bottom of the bracket, that 67 of my teams are in the actual bracket, so I don't have many complaints. There is some seeding stuff that doesn't make any sense. We had on CBS Sports Network last night Tom Burnett on. He is a member of the selection committee, and he will be the chair of the selection committee next season. He's the vice chairman this season to Mitch Barnhart, the athletic director at Kentucky. And one of the things I noticed when the seed list came out, because what they do is they create a bracket, but that bracket isn't representative of exactly in which order they rank these teams, because there's bracketing principles and they have to move teams around to keep them away from, you know, conference fellow conference members and that kind of stuff. And so I'm always interested to get the 1 to 68 seed list, because that is the actual ranking, 1 through 68, of how the selection committee sees these teams. And when I saw it, confusingly, Georgetown and Oregon State, both of which were, quote, bid stealers, were higher on the seed list than Drake, which was a traditional at-large team. Like, Drake just got in because we have to take another at-large team, and we're going to take Drake. And so this doesn't make any sense, because everybody heading into the Big East Championship game said Georgetown's got to win this, or else Georgetown's not in. And they said Oregon State, heading into the Pac-12 tournament title game, they got to win this, or they're not in. So they were bid stealers. In fact, Mitch Barnhart is on national television, the chair of the committee, saying that Georgetown and Oregon State winning their conference tournaments and getting those automatic bids are the things that push Louisville and Colorado State out of the bracket. They were in, but then the Pac-12 team got a bid steal. Pac-12 tournament got a bid stealer. Big East tournament got a bid stealer. And so two teams got to go. Those two teams were Louisville and Colorado State. So this wasn't just Joe Lunardi saying they're bid stealers or Jerry Palm saying they're bid stealers. This is literally the chairman of the selection committee saying they're bid stealers. Well, then why are they ahead of Drake in the seed list when Drake is an actual at-large team? And so we had Tom Burnett on, again, vice chairman of the selection committee, CBS Sports Network last night, and I asked him that exact question. You know what he said? He just talked around it. He didn't have an answer for it. I think in a span of like a six-minute interview, I asked him three questions. He didn't answer any of them. Like, just stand by your stuff. Just stand by. Like, I think it's obviously nonsensical, but, like, explain why you did it. That's when I get frustrated. I don't really get caught up on too much. That team is an 8, and, man, it should have been a 7. Like, whatever. That's pretty subjective. You know, that team's a 6, and it should have been a 5. Like, okay, maybe you're right, but that's pretty subjective. Where I get frustrated is when you do nonsensical things and you can't explain them to me. Why did you do that? And you don't have, forget a good reason, because there's no good reason. You don't have any reason. It's just something that got done. Like, you can think whatever you want about the top 25 and what I do every morning, but there is not a question you could ask me connected to it that I wouldn't be able to answer. Hey, GP, why do you have Alabama in the top 10? Well, let me explain. Hey, GP, why do you have Gonzaga number 1? Well, let me explain. I can always answer for anything I do. And I don't understand when you've got a 10-person committee, something like Georgetown and Oregon State being ahead of Drake, which makes no sense for the reasons I've already explained, why I don't understand how that happens, how nobody raises their hand. Like, I saw the seed list, and it's the first thing I saw, 10 people in a room. How does nobody see that in the room and ask the question? Hey, guys, what are we doing here with Georgetown and Oregon State ahead of Drake? Those are bid stealers. They shouldn't be ahead of an at-large team. I'll never understand how you can get 10 smart people, presumably, in a room, and not one of them catches the thing that I caught and lots of people caught within seconds of the seed list being published. So, again, I could nitpick it to death, but I think they got the top of the bracket right. The future national champion is definitely in it. There's nobody that was left out that had a chance to win it, and so it serves its purpose. We got 68 teams, and now we're going to play a tournament under unusual circumstances and ultimately crown a champion. Big Bet Bennett, everybody fills out a bracket and they get a Final Four.
Yep.
What's yours look like?
My Final Four, I mean, it's, you know, it is what it is. I've got the Zags, Alabama, Baylor, and Houston is my kind of surprise one.
We are connected on three of those. I've got Gonzaga playing Baylor. I mean, Gonzaga playing Alabama in the Final Four on the left side of the bracket. Michigan is the one seed there. But Isaiah Livers, who is one of their most important players, has a stress injury and is out indefinitely. And it sounds like indefinitely is probably for the rest of the season. Definitely not going to be available early. And that just changes Michigan. Mm-hmm. You know, like Michigan has been one of the best teams in the country for 2 years now. Two straight years under Juwan Howard. I mean, evidence being they got a one seed in this season. They're 6-7 in that span when Isaiah Livers doesn't play. You cannot overstate how important he is to what they do. Second in points, third in rebounds, first in minutes played. And he is not available. I just think that makes Michigan susceptible to an upset along the way. Maybe not in round one. Definitely not in round one. Maybe not in round two. But I think by the time you get to the Sweet 16 and you're playing, you know, maybe Florida State or Colorado or even Georgetown, then you probably have some issues. I've got Michigan going to the Elite Eight, but I've got Alabama beating them. I love that Alabama team. I've been talking about them for months now. You know, top 5 in defensive efficiency, top 10 in tempo, and, you know, 50% of their shots just about are coming from three-point range. They can bomb on you. I've got Alabama-Gonzaga in the Final Four on the left side of the bracket, and then on the right side, Baylor in Illinois. Chris Patola said it. You know, Illinois has been playing really, really well. 14-1 past 15 games. Won more Big Ten games than anybody. Won the Big Ten tournament. And they are a perfect example of something that I noticed a while ago and try to remind myself every preseason. We spend a lot of time talking about recruiting classes. This is the number 1 recruiting class in America. This is the number 6 recruiting class in America. 5-star freshman, 5-star freshman, 5-star freshman. And that stuff does matter. And sometimes it is the reason somebody wins a national championship. 2012 Kentucky, 2015 Duke. More often than not, though, you know who is the national champion? More often than not, the national champion is a team that has legitimate NBA draft picks who decided to come back to school. It's not about what five-star freshmen do you enroll. It's what legitimate NBA prospect do you get to come back to school for one more year. And Illinois got two of them. Weekend heading into the deadline to withdraw from the 2020 NBA draft, Ayo Dosunmu and Kofi Coburn both withdrew from the draft. And suddenly Illinois goes from a team that would have been unranked in the preseason to a team that was ranked in the top five preseason, and now they're looking like a legitimate national championship contender. I have Gonzaga winning this. I think they're going to finish 32-0, and I think they're going to be the first undefeated national champion since 1976 yep. Indiana. But if you are asking who is the biggest threat to Gonzaga in this field of 68, I think it's pretty clearly Illinois. A, with the talent involved. B, because of the coach on the sideline. And C, based on how they've been playing recently. Gonzaga is the only undefeated team in America. Illinois has probably been playing at a higher level than anybody for a not insignificant amount of time. We'll see if it carries over to the NCAA tournament, but that is my final four. Gonzaga, Alabama, Baylor, Illinois. Bennett's got Gonzaga, Alabama, Baylor, and Houston. Before we get to Jeff Calkins, let me tell you about FanDuel. There's always that one team that ruins your bracket. That's why this year I'm betting the tournament on FanDuel Sportsbook. That's America's number one sportsbook, because on FanDuel, your first bet is risk-free. It doesn't matter if you're betting on the Zags or the Wolverines or the Vols or anybody else. New users get up to $1,000 in site credit back if your first bet doesn't win. Beyond that, FanDuel has odds on all the action. With games day and night, an easy-to-use app, and always on promotions, your next chance to win with FanDuel is only minutes away. And if that's not enough, FanDuel, it also wants to make you a millionaire. They're giving away $1 million to one lucky bettor. New and existing users get an additional shot at the payout every day you bet the tournament. So if you want a shot at becoming a millionaire, go download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Just use promo code Gary when you sign up. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, an official partner with Radio.com and this station. Again, promo code Gary, promo code Gary. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply for the $1 million drawing. Risk-free offer for first online real money wager only. Site credit is non-withdrawable and expires 14 days after receipt. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Jeff Calkins is up next.